Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. You will hear our English language learning program, Everyday Grammar. Then, listen to our history series, America's Presidents. Today, hear about President Andrew Jackson. But first, this report.
The Nobel Prize season begins on October 1st with the announcement of the prize for physiology or medicine. But one award will not be announced this year, the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Swedish Academy said in May it would not name a literature laureate this year, following accusations of sexual abuse and other wrongdoing by people connected to the Academy. Anders Olsson, the Academy's permanent secretary, said at the time that the group needed time to rebuild public trust before choosing the next laureate. The Swedish Academy will instead name two literature laureates in 2019. Members of Sweden's Cultural Society have come together to create a replacement literature award this year. The group released the names of four possible winners of the so-called new Academy Prize. The winner will be announced on October 12th. The scandal that has hit the Swedish Academy involves photographer Jean-Claude Arnault. He is the husband of Swedish Academy member and writer Katarina Frostenson. At least 18 women have accused Arnault of rape or sexual assault. Some of the assaults are said to have happened at properties owned by the Swedish Academy. For many years, Arnault and Frostenson ran an organization in Stockholm that held readings and performances by well-known people, including past Nobel laureates. The Swedish Academy gave money to the organization. Arnault's rape trial in Stockholm ended last week. He is now waiting for the court's decision. He has repeatedly denied all the charges against him. Arnault has also been accused of leaking the names of literature prize winners before they were announced, including past laureates Bob Dylan and Harold Pinter. The Academy operates a highly secretive selection process. Swedish Academy members found themselves unable to make a decision about Frostenson and Arnault's future with the Academy. This led to strong fighting within the organization. Members insulted each other in media reports. Three of the 18 members resigned after the Academy's leadership decided to let Frostenson remain in her position. The Academy's permanent secretary then resigned in protest. Later, Frostenson also left the Academy. After the scandal, 100 of Swedish society's most important cultural members established the new Academy Prize. Unlike the Swedish Academy, the new Academy's nomination process is not secretive. The new Academy asked Swedish librarians to nominate writers for the prize. The public then got to vote for the 47 nominees that the new Academy received. three top vote winners, plus one candidate chosen by literature experts, made up the shortlist of four nominees. They are Britain's Neil Gaiman, Haruki Murakami of Japan, Canadian Kim Thuy, and Maryse Kond of Guadeloupe. The new Academy required that the shortlist have two women and two men. Gaiman wrote on Twitter that winning would not make me any happier than being on that list makes me. However, Murakami said he would not accept the prize. His name was removed from the list. Most in the literary world agree with the Swedish Academy's decision to not name a laureate in 2018. Maria Schottenius, a Swedish literature critic, said this is the best decision they could have made. She added that the Academy will have a chance to rebuild itself and be ready to award the prize next year. Nobel Prizes are awarded in science, medicine, literature, and peacemaking. Swedish inventor Alfred Nobel provided money for their establishment after his death. This is the first time since 1949 that the Literature Award has been delayed. Japanese-born British novelist Kazuo Ishiguro won the prize last year. I'm Susan Shand.
Many languages shorten words in everyday speech. In English, we shorten a lot of words. One way we do this is with contractions, two words joined with a special mark called an apostrophe. The apostrophe shows the reader where letters have been removed. For example, the words is and not can be combined to form the contraction isn't. There is a letter missing between the letters N and T. Contractions are one of the most feared subjects for English learners. They usually do not enjoy writing or reading them. Many are unsure how to say them and often can't understand native English speakers when they use them. This fear probably comes from questions about them. Learners are unsure of what the words mean, which letters were removed, how to spell them, and where to put the apostrophe. Some English learners are even unsure whether contractions are correct English. They hear them in films and songs and may think they are not grammatical. In this Everyday Grammar program, we'll try to answer those questions. You may also remember an earlier program that shared some of the sounds of contractions. We use contractions in speaking, informal writing, and even some kinds of formal writing. They are indeed grammatical. You might even see contractions in newspapers, such as the Washington Post, or on television. Yet, we do not use contractions in very formal writing, such as in a college paper or a business letter. Native speakers almost always speak with contractions unless they purposely choose not to in order to emphasize something. Compare these sentences.
I'm not tired. I am not tired.
The first sentence seems to be a simple, factual statement. But if a native speaker uses the second one, they are likely emphasizing they are not tired. It makes a stronger statement. Using contractions makes your English sound more natural, but English learners are not required to use them. But since contractions are so widely used, it's a good idea to know their mechanics. This will help reduce misunderstandings and hopefully fear. Number one, most contractions are some form of noun plus verb. The first word is usually a pronoun, and the second is usually an auxiliary verb. Contractions combine these parts of speech. Pronoun plus verb, as in he'll, meaning he will, and she'd, meaning she would. Noun plus verb, as in the books on the table. Name plus verb, as in Anna's going to a baseball game. Verb plus not, as in aren't, meaning are not, and shouldn't, meaning should not. And question word plus verb, as in where's the beef and what's that? Notice again that most of these involve some form of noun plus verb. We can also make contractions with the words this, that, here, and there, as in this'll only take a minute, and there's my phone. Number two, most verbs in contractions are auxiliary verbs. You may recall from earlier programs that auxiliary verbs are helping verbs. They help to give meaning or purpose to main verbs. In the sentence, she's leaving today, the word is acts as an auxiliary verb and is part of the present continuous verb tense. The main verb is leaving. Auxiliary verbs also include modal verbs, sometimes called modal auxiliaries, such as should, can, could, must, will, and would. Number three, the verbs be and have act as auxiliary verbs in some contractions, in others, they act as main verbs. In a statement like, she's a teacher, the word is in she's is a main verb. But in she's leaving today, the verb is an auxiliary verb and part of a verb tense. Number four, affirmative contractions are never used at the end of a sentence. An affirmative contraction is a contraction that is used to confirm a piece of information. Let's hear an example.
Are you in the library?
Yes, I am.
The correct way to answer is yes, I am, not yes, I'm. Number five, we do end statements with negative contractions. Listen to an example of someone answering a yes or no question.
Have you been to the new cafe yet?
No, I haven't.
Number six, contractions with the verb be plus negative can be made in two ways. To better understand this, let's hear examples.
They're not at the meeting place.
In this sentence, the contraction is they plus are.
They aren't at the meeting place.
In this sentence, the contraction is are plus not. The first way is more common than the second. Number seven, do not make have into a contraction when it is the main verb. As I said earlier, the verb have can be either an auxiliary verb or main verb in contractions. But when a sentence uses have as the main verb, we do not shorten it. For example, Americans would not say, I've a cat, to mean I have a cat. The British, however, do use this kind of contraction, although it is not as common as them saying, I've got a cat, which is not correct in American English. If you'd like to communicate more fluently and better understand the writing and speech of native speakers, it's a good idea to understand contractions. We hope this program has helped reduce your fears, but practicing is the best thing you can do. And remember, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I'm Alice Bryant.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Andrew Jackson, the seventh president, was unlike the earlier U.S. presidents. His family was poor, he had little education, and he lived on what was then the western part of the country. Jackson became nationally known in the early 1800s, first as a fighter against Native American tribes, and then as a general in the War of 1812 against the British. His image as a military hero and man of the people made him a popular choice for the presidency. But critics said Jackson did not accept any limits on his power. He is also remembered for supporting slavery and for forcing Native Americans from their homes. Andrew Jackson's parents were immigrants from Ireland. His father died in an accident before Andrew, the third and youngest son, was born. When the American colonies entered a war of independence, Andrew and his two brothers fought against the British, although Andrew was too young to be a regular soldier. Andrew's oldest brother soon died. Then Andrew and his other brother were both captured by British soldiers. One cut Andrew's face, leaving a scar that remained his entire life. But Andrew, unlike his brother, survived captivity. A short time later, Andrew's mother became sick and died. By age 15, Andrew Jackson had no living immediate family. He had already stopped attending school, but taught himself enough to become a lawyer. He moved to what became Nashville, Tennessee, where he developed a successful law career. In time, he bought land and slaves. Jackson was tall and thin, with red hair and bright blue eyes. Sometimes Jackson was playful. He loved to dance, hold parties, and play games where he could win money. Sometimes he was violent. He was known for getting angry easily. Jackson fought duels with several men. In one, he killed a man who insulted his wife. Yet many people liked Jackson's passionate, action-first personality. By the time the United States entered the War of 1812, Jackson had been a congressman, senator, and judge. Jackson did not have any officially recognized military training, but during the War of 1812, he volunteered in the Tennessee militia and quickly took control of troops. Many of his soldiers came to respect him. Jackson refused to give up, even when the government ordered the militia to disband, and when some of the men wanted to leave, he threatened them with a gun. Because he was uncompromising and strong as a tree, soldiers called Jackson Old Hickory. A group of Creek Indians gave him another name. After he defeated them in battle, Jackson negotiated a treaty that punished both his Native American enemies and his Native American allies. The treaty was more severe than the U.S. government had asked. In time, it forced the Creeks, as well as several other tribes, off their land. The move was popular with many white settlers. It was less popular with the Creeks, who called Jackson Sharp Knife. His best-known military operation was in New Orleans, Louisiana. A large, experienced army of British soldiers moved to attack. Jackson defended the city with a small group of untrained soldiers. His group included volunteers, free blacks, Creoles, Native Americans, and pirates. Jackson's ragtag troops not only defeated the British force, but suffered only a few losses. Jackson didn't know that the battle came after the British and Americans had already agreed to end the war. But his victory there gave many Americans a feeling of pride. It also made Jackson famous. He became known across the country as the hero of New Orleans. Voters across the country supported Jackson, too. He was especially well-liked in the South and West. Many Americans saw him as a man of the people. They believed his success came from experience and hard work, not wealth and family connections. In the presidential election of 1824, Jackson received more popular and electoral votes than any of the other candidates. But because no candidate had a majority, lawmakers in the House of Representatives decided the election. Those lawmakers chose John Quincy Adams, the son of former President John Adams. They were persuaded, in part, because a leader in Congress named Henry Clay said Jackson did not have the temperament to be president. Immediately after Quincy Adams won, he appointed Clay Secretary of State. The appointment angered Jackson. He believed Adams and Clay had entered into a corrupt bargain. In the next presidential election 4 years later, Jackson defeated Quincy Adams in a landslide. And in the presidential election after that, he crushed Henry Clay. Jackson wanted to be a powerful leader who controlled a limited federal government, but he wanted that government to have power over state governments. For example, Jackson refused to let the state of South Carolina nullify or ignore a federal law that state officials opposed. Jackson said if they failed to obey the law, he would consider them traitors and send in troops. In time, South Carolina and Congress were able to reach a compromise on the law. Jackson also refused to extend the charter of the National Bank. He believed the bank helped industrialists and businesses more than farmers and settlers. His move was popular with many voters, especially farmers and settlers. But Jackson's opponents warned against the bank veto. They disagreed with his economic plan, and they objected to how he had operated outside of Congress. Senators censured Jackson for acting as if he did not have to follow the law. Jackson's supporters fought back. They removed the official criticism from the Senate records. Jackson vetoed more bills than the first six presidents combined. He actively worked for only one major law, the Indian Removal Act of 1830. Jackson believed Native Americans occupied land that should belong to white settlers. He also thought Native Americans would be destroyed or lose their culture to white people anyway. So he offered several tribes what appeared to be generous treaties to move onto land west of the Mississippi River. But the treaties were often unfair or illegal. The tribes who accepted rarely received the benefits Jackson promised them, and some tribes, such as the Cherokees, simply refused to go. Empowered by Jackson's Indian Removal Act, U.S. government officials eventually forced 15,000 Cherokees off their land. They were made to march over 1,600 kilometers. About 4,000 died on the march. It is remembered as the Trail of Tears. For white settlers, Jackson's Indian removal policies resulted in over 100,000 square kilometers of new land to farm. Thousands of cotton planters moved west with their enslaved workers. The Indian Removal Act served not only to aid an economic boom in cotton, but to spread slavery further in the United States. Jackson had no objections. In 1837, Jackson officially moved out of the White House, but he did not really leave the presidency. He advised the presidents who followed him from his home in Tennessee. Jackson had particular influence over two future leaders, Martin Van Buren, his former vice president, and James Polk, who shared Jackson's beliefs so closely that he was called Young Hickory. Jackson's beloved wife, Rachel, had died before he took office. They did not have any children together, but they raised two boys, a Native American orphan who died as a teenager, and a nephew, whom they called Andrew Jackson Jr. The younger Andrew Jackson and his wife lived with the former president in his final years. He died in his bed at 78 of old wounds and old age, but his legacy remains very much alive. Jackson changed the U.S. presidency. After him, presidential candidates had to show they could connect with voters, not just lawmakers. He also increased the power of the chief executive. Jackson often questioned, or dismissed, the power of Congress, the Constitution, and the Supreme Court. And he began the custom of replacing experienced government officials with people whose main qualification was their loyalty to him. Critics added to Jackson's nicknames. They called him King Andrew, King Mob, or American Caesar. The opposition to Jackson led to a new political party called the Whigs. Part of Jackson's legacy is the two major party system that exists in the U.S. today. But those who loved Jackson really loved him. His humble beginnings, rise to power, and defense of the common man inspired them. In the U.S., the name of Andrew Jackson is still often used as a positive symbol of American democracy. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program on the Voice of America.